What's up, guys, and welcome to BitCast, episode 118 for the month of March 2024. I'm your host, Jake Martin, and on the mics, as always, we have Landry Smith. What's up, dude?
Jake, what's going on, man?
We're back at it. Another month. Yeah, it's weird. Like, again, we talked about this last time, maybe, but we go actually like almost a month with not really talking about video games with each other, except for, I guess, in our small chat groups, which pop off every now and then, like it did today.
Yeah, we'll text about like certain things, maybe not even stuff that's happening in the month. It might be about a video game that came out in 2017, like a lot of today's discussion was about. So.
yes. Poor Dragon Quest XI.
Dude, there's nothing poor about it.
I didn't mean anything what I said, okay? I didn't mean those things. I just, you know, my criticisms came out, and I'm sorry. Hey, but yeah, okay. Man.
We're all allowed a bad take now and again.
Okay, it's not a bad take. It's a fine take, okay? How dare you?
It's a fine take.
Yeah, man, what you been up to? Anything kind of fun or new?
Yeah, man, so we had spring break a couple weeks ago.
Oh, nice. And you actually get to have a spring break. You get to be off.
I do, yeah. That's a real nice perk of being a teacher. But so my mother-in-law called us up and was like, hey, I've got this Bowflex in the garage, and I'm thinking about selling it or giving it away. And I was like, well, I will like rent a U-Haul and come and grab it from you. So I did, and got in the garage, and we got a little gym down there now. So
let's go.
It's been fun. Dude. Yeah.
So I love a good garage gym, or just like a good little gym, home gym setup. All I have are like some Olympic dumbbells, and they work for me. They work for what I need to do. I'm going to be a string bean pretty much my whole life. So just, you know, muscle.
There are worse things than that, man.
I guess. Yeah. Muscle has avoided me this far. But I had like a half rack in my old house. And I had the full intention of using that thing. And I was like good for the first like month or two. And then I just slowly died off, and I just stopped using it. And I was like, I need to sell this. This is just taking up space.
It's so hard to build a good routine and like stay consistent, man.
It is.
I'm really, really good for like doing 3 months of like just working out really hard, like losing like a really good chunk of weight and like feeling great, and then something happens and it falls apart. So
every time,
this is my next crack at it. We'll see what happens.
I like it. I'm all for it. I've
never had a home gym before though, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, because like, I mean, half the battle is the inconvenience of having to go to the gym, right?
Yes.
You're like, I'm not waking up early and going to do this. But if it's in your house, you're like, well, all right, that's a little bit easier. I don't have as much of an excuse now to not go do this, other than I'm tired.
Yeah. And for us, like, it's like, oh, if the kid wakes up in the middle of the, you know, at 5 a.m, I'm still there to go and help out with that, you know?
Right, exactly. And that is the benefit too. Like, yeah, when you're a parent and you're trying to like get your kids to go back to sleep, you wake up early because they woke up early, but maybe they'll go back to sleep for a little bit. It's like, well, I'm already up. What am I going to do now with this extra hour before I have to be somewhere?
Go crank some weight.
Just go push and pull on some things, man. Hell exactly. Yeah. Some heavy stuff. I'm kind of in the same boat, actually. It's kind of funny you mentioned that. I've started running a lot.
Nice, dude.
Again. So, again, not helping me with building mass. But
still awesome, man.
I used to
love running, man.
I was bad at every sport, Landry. I was bad at every sport. I got better as when I came to college. I had a friend, you know, Jeff Allen. He's good at basketball, and he was like, your height is wasted. He's like, I'm just going to teach you like the fundamentals of like playing basketball, and then like you'll be pretty good. And he's right. He like taught me like the basics of like pivoting and like boxing out down low and just rebounding. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'm helpful to the team now. Like, I'm good at this. So,
hey, yeah. You just got to play a role, man. That's all.
Just got to play a role.
You don't got to go out there and score 24
don't
points
shoot.
Every day.
I will never shoot. I am terrible, but I can do a layup, and that's about it. So, yeah, I like basketball. But, yeah, I've been running a lot, picking it back up. And that's because that was all I was good at, was running. And I love it, man. It's just something about being outside, just being in the sun. And again, running in the morning sucks. Running in the morning is depressing. You're by yourself and it's cold. No one's up.
It is so awful. And like, in the early spring months and like in the winter, you know, that's when it really sucks. Like, I remember in high school, I ran a very small amount of cross country for 1 year. And I remember some of those cross country practices and like, you know, 4:30 a.m. And it's like, you can just feel the cold in the back of your throat. It's like, you can taste the blood. It's awful, dude.
Yeah. Taste the blood. All my capillaries are bursting right now. It's too cold. I shouldn't be out here. No, no amount of bundling is going to help too. It's just, it's a mess. You put too many layers on, then you get hot and then you're like halfway through the run. You're like, what am I going to do with all these layers? I can't take them off. I have to just deal with this now. It's a whole ordeal. But anyways, you guys are tuning in. This is BitCast, a monthly gaming podcast where Landry and I just get together once a month and recap the gaming news for all those folks out there that are like us who don't maybe have as much time as they used to stay up to date. So we do that for you. We have all these little news segments collected from the month of March. So we'll be walking through those. We also have our Game & Watch segment where we'll be looking at months coming out in April. So you guys can kind of keep an eye on those, and we'll tell you which ones we think might be worth checking out. We have our Game of the Month Club, where Landry and I played Castlevania Symphony of the Night all through the month of March. It was super cheap on PS5. I missed the sale.
Oh, man.
So I paid $20 for it, which still is not that bad. And we'll talk about that.
It was $2.99. I mean, I don't want to rub salt in the wound.
But I know.
It was $2.99.
I'm a fool. I know that I had it on like one of my like emulators, and I was just like, oh, I'll play it on there. And then I just never got around to it. And I was like, well, I'll just play it on PS5 now. So it's fine.
Cool.
Well, I'm happy. I'm happy about it.
Yeah.
I'm happy to support Konami, you know.
And they now, you know, if you ever get the itch, you've got Rondo of Blood as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then our fan favorite segment, Name That Game Music with a Twist today, or a new update where Landry and I have both submitted two songs for each other to guess. So we're going to try and guess each other's songs we've submitted.
I'm stoked about that one, man.
See how we do.
I'm stoked about all of it.
Eventually, what I think would be cool is if we have listeners that can like submit the songs themselves and we'll just like play them.
That's a terrifying proposition.
That is terrifying because if we like, never listen to it, it's like, oh, snap, they just put some really profane or gross things in here that I cannot play on this podcast.
Yeah, for real. Well, that is scary. And then also it's like you're probably the same way. Like, I have a lot of knowledge in Nintendo, and I have a lot of like a little knowledge in PlayStation. Sega, Xbox, it's going to be rough.
Yeah.
On those fronts. And then PC gaming pretty much missed me my whole life. So
yeah, it's over. Unless it's like, what's the Galaxy Pinball or whatever that pinball game was on the PC. There was no soundtrack. It was just like, beep, beep, beep,
beep. Say like, I remember Minesweeper. I've got some of those sound effects.
Great soundtrack. Great soundtrack. All right. Well, housekeeping, guys, if you are listening and you enjoy the show, please write into us, leave a review. We appreciate that. And we will read off some of those as they come in. So please go and do that on your preferred listening services out there. All right, let's jump into our first segment, Landry. This month in gaming news, covering the biggest news from the month with our own curated selection so you don't get bogged down. First up in the list of this first segment is industry stuff you should know about. Thank you. This has been kind of a dry month, Landry. There's not a lot going on this month in March.
Dude, we have been blessed with some just like crazy months in January and February. And yeah, mm-hmm. You're right. This past month, kind of calm, which is what you expect for the beginning of the year. So this is kind of more of a normal, I feel like, pace for March than January and February.
I mean, we probably are like, we're going to be kicking ourselves after this. But, you know, Nintendo, they launched the Switch in March. And I was like really hoping for some Switch news this month. I was like, this is going to happen. It's going to happen.
All the like, you know, I forgot at the beginning of the year, that's what everybody was predicting. Like, oh, by March, we're going to know about a new console.
Nothing.
And now it seems like, you know, we might be waiting for quite a while.
Our hopes are dashed and I am sad. But it is okay. I'm still holding out that we'll get some news this year. Who knows?
I think we'll get news this year for sure.
I hope so. But yeah, so speaking of Nintendo, first up on our list, Nintendo and Yuzu, which was an illegal, like, or an emulator that basically allowed people to run Switch games on random devices. Basically, they reached an agreement that Nintendo took these folks to court, and Yuzu is paying them $2.4 million for damages, basically. to their brand. And, you know, the whole argument was that they knowingly created something that was going to allow people to like circumvent having to pay for Nintendo cartridges or Nintendo software and be able to just play it on illegally on different devices. So, I mean,
emulators are, you know, everybody always calls them a gray area. I just think like if you're emulating something that has, you can go out into the store and buy like right now, that to me is where it's just like, that's just a real shady practice. Like I understand some people do it, you know, the right way and they're buying a Switch game, they're buying Tears of the Kingdom and then they emulate it on a PC so they can get a better frame rate. And, you know, that's all well and good, but I just feel like, you know, having that open and doing it the way they were doing it, where they had like a Discord server where they were literally charging people a certain level or tier level and then like giving them access to ROMs or telling them where to go seek them out, like that is super shady. So I think this was just kind of, that was going to happen. I mean, I'm no stranger to emulation. I've got this little guy packed full of games. Thanks to you. And you know, but that has like Super Nintendo and Genesis and Game Boy games on it. It's like, dude, these things have been out of commission for 30 years. So really, this is just, you know, I'm the type of guy who likes to play stuff that I've heard about, that I, there's no way I could go out to the store and pick it up. But I'm also that same guy who's got, you know, 200 old games and shoved in a closet. Right. So I'm going to, you know, that kind of emulation to me misses me. Maybe it's hypocritical. It just, you know, I've justified it in my mind somehow. So,
well, in like you can see the analog pocket
coming for a long time.
Yeah. And the analog pocket, I mean, it's built to be able to play original cartridge hardware. So you can play Game Boy, Game Boy Advance, Game Boy Color games on there. And it's amazing. Like that's a great way to replay those old games. But yeah, if you were to want to go and play some of these older titles, like again, Mother 3 is a game that exists that doesn't exist anywhere really outside of Japan.
Yeah, you've got to get like an English translation.
And there's a
patch.
Way to actually play that. People have translated it for you, like but only through an emulator. This is the way you can play that really. So it's just like, well, you know, it's kind of a cool thing that I want to try out. So yeah, I'll check it out. I mean, not surprising, but this is, I think, the first big shutdown for Nintendo that's going to kind of set the precedent for other folks trying to emulate. And as soon as this happened, I think somebody else already came onto the market with their own version, you know.
I'm sure they will. Yeah, I just think there's a this got a little too big for its own good, you know.
They were charging money, like that's their biggest thing. It's like, you're charging money for this, and like that's just,
yeah, you're making, you're done, money dude. Off Nintendo's property, then you're
done.
You
dude.
Just, you know that they're coming after you, so
you're a fool, you're done.
But with that, a 3DS emulator shut down as well that same day. And that sucks because, you know, 3DS is just completely offline. There's no way to get a lot of those games. And then, you know, a lot of the eShop games are just, you know, gone forever. Yep. And I personally believe that, like, the whole game preservation conversation has been blown way out of proportion. But
I agree.
I think it's important. Obviously, I want to play games and stuff, but it's just, it's so silly the way people think it's like such a big deal. But, it is to an extent. I'll give you that. But,
The difference is that like the mediums have changed with each console generation, whereas film has remained kind of the same the entire time. Like we've lost film. There have been movies that have just like disappeared, gone out of existence. But I think like our cataloging and like ability to be able to store up film and like different movies over the decades has like kind of existed for a long time. And like, there's not really like a way to do a lot of this right now for video games. It's just like, if you want that, you can pay the publisher for it. And you also have to like subscribe to this weird library to give you access to these old games, which, you know, I'm fine to do if it's a good library, but you know, We'll get there eventually.
Yeah.
We'll see. All right. Next up, we had the Xbox partner preview on March 6th. And there was some cool stuff shown in here. I think you and I were talking a little bit before this. Tales of Kinsara Zao, Z-A-U, looks cool. That's the only problem with this game, unfortunately, is that we had Prince of Persia land in January and like people freaking loved it. And it's
that
like
stole the Metroidvania conversation probably for the year.
Yeah, it's
unless Silksong comes out, you know.
Right. Maybe it's just the year of Metroidvania. They all just freaking rip.
That'd be cool. It's kind of already been the year of Metroidvania for me and like my game playing this year. Castlevania, I'm playing Metroid Zero Mission.
Oof. That's a lot.
It's pretty sweet.
But yeah, we had a really cool like sleight of hand game, which is like a card-based combat. I think they explained this a little bit better, but that game looked really neat.
It looked cool. It had an interesting art style and vibe.
I'm leaning always more and more towards that level of gameplay or like that style of art. We get so many games that try to push like the envelope of realism, and I still am just like, I'm more attracted to games that are doing something more artistically interesting, even if it's less realistic.
Yeah, I've for the most part. I mean, if you just look at like what I play, that's true. I do love some of the realism stuff coming out of Sony, like the Spider-Man games. I was looking at some videos of some of Spider-Man 2 earlier today. It just looks so incredible. And then The Last of Us and God of War, like those games are incredible to look at.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I really do like a good art style.
Yeah. It's just great. It's creative. You know, it's just a creative fun time. I want to be having fun. And this is to me right now what fun looks like. So any other shout outs or ones that you like saw and they're like, oh, these look pretty good.
Not really, man. I mean, I remember seeing a couple of these and thinking like, oh, that looks pretty cool. But I don't remember any of them now, like 20 days later or however long it was. But I do want to just say like, it's so cool that Xbox is doing like these partner directs. They've already had two this year. And I just think that like having them at a more frequent cadence gives your fan base more to look forward to. And even if, you know, they can latch on to one game or like a hardcore gamer can latch on to one game that they're excited about, that's awesome. Because like, to be honest, like as a Sony and Nintendo guy, there's not really anything I'm super excited about for either of those consoles because they've been doing this thing where they're playing their cards so close to their chest lately.
Right.
It's like, dude, there's nothing to be hyped for. And I don't necessarily like that strategy. I understand because video game release dates, I feel like publishers just have no idea when these things are actually going to come out these days with the way that things have ballooned with development costs and time. But at the same time, it's just not as fun for us, you know, who are hobbyists and trying to get our kicks regularly, you know?
Do you think that people are now just looking to Nintendo for like what they should be doing? Because you just saying that made me think of how Nintendo has kind of made these decisions that at the time seemed like controversial and like different because they were going against the grain of like what other developers and publishers were doing. But like, again, the Nintendo Directs were Nintendo really was, I feel like, one of the first publishers and developers to do this
on
a broad scale. They're like, we're going to just do this. We're going to control our own message and make it happen this way. And then talking about keeping your release dates and the games you're wanting to sort of like lay out for the year. Nintendo was like the first company, I feel like, to do this in a year where like, hey, we're only going to show you games that we know are coming out in the next 3 months.
Yeah.
And we're not going to give you dates for stuff that's like forever away or like we just don't even know when it's going to launch or land next. Like, I feel like more and more companies now are like, oh, people like it when you can just tell them that the game is coming out as opposed to just sort of just showing it and then like never talking about it for 3 years.
Like, I do think that like there are suits looking at Nintendo like these guys are making money hand over fist. How can we do the same thing? But the difference is, and Xbox is kind of on Nintendo's level now with content output, or at least they can be, and I anticipate seeing them in the future. Sony's not on that level. So if Sony does the same thing, it just feels like every 6 months you know about a new title that's coming out. And that, to me, is it's not enough to... Like, I'm worried about Sony PlayStation 6. Like, I think they've got a lot going for them right now, but I think this console generation has just been completely mucked up
GTA
because
6.
There's just not enough to keep people going.
Yeah. yeah, we're going to talk about this in a second with it. Well, we can talk about it now, actually. So that kind of like jumps us over to the PS5 Pro. Like we got some specs about the PS5 Pro. And I think initially when people were talking about the rumors of this existing, everyone kind of got a little bit like, whoa, we're already like bumping into the Pro territory. And I don't even feel like we've done enough with the PS5 yet. Like there's nothing that's happened on the PS5 that I feel like warrants a new half mid-cycle console upgrade.
Yeah. There's hardly any games for the PS5. You know, so like PS5 exclusives, you know, they're taking full advantage of PS5 hardware.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that Eurogamer article said that it makes so much sense is that these console cycles take so much time to develop for. So they probably put PS5 Pro into production 3-4 years ago, and they couldn't have anticipated, you know, what's probably how the drip feed of content was going to happen for this system. But the thing that I want to ask you as a marketing guy, like if you remember the PS4 Pro, it was quite a success because there were new TVs in a widespread market at that point, right? We had hit the jump to 4K. Mm-hmm. It wasn't outlandish for like to go over to a friend's house and them have a 4K TV where, you know, 4 years ago, 4K was like the elite, like very, very, very expensive TVs. And they had kind of hit that market where you could go and spend $500 and get a pretty solid 4K TV.
Yeah.
So the PS4 Pro had 4K capabilities, and that was the huge selling point, right? Like,
yep.
Get this, it's going to put out this beautiful image on your brand new TV. There's nothing for the PS5 Pro that is anything but like it's kind of like PC gaming. Like, if you're just going to like crank the specs up a little bit, like you may get
marginal upgrades.
Yeah, you may get a little bit better of like a ray tracing effect, which like most people have no idea what ray tracing is, right? It's like, you know, I know what it is and I can explain it, I guess, to the layman. Like, as I understand it, it's like each individual lighting effect in the game has its own property, and it like actually bounce, like the light rays bounce off of like objects. So like the shadows become deeper and it kind of has like a more natural lighting look. But like if you even just put like two images together of like a high fidelity mode ray tracing versus like a PS5, like, performance mode image right next to each other, like a very keen eye can spot the difference between those things. Yeah. So it's like, what is their marketing gimmick going to be to even sell this thing? Cause right now I'm looking at the specs and like, I just don't see anything that's probably going to be $100 extra, I would imagine, $599 ish.
Yeah. I appreciate you giving me some element of credit for being a marketing person to be able to talk more into this. But I mean, really, they're going to have to go the route, I feel like, of the iPhone niche, like crowd, the folks who buy the standard iPhone and the folks who buy the iPhone Pro Max. Like there's always going to be that crowd of enthusiasts. And, you know, Sony knows that they've built up a good, strong audience that's passionate about what they're providing. And so, you know, if what they continue to provide are these like AAA budget blockbuster movies that just are movies, video games that look so good that you're going to want this newest piece of hardware to get the best performance and to, you know, make these games look even better on your TV, then you're going to want to upgrade for this. That's the only thing I can say like would work for like what they're providing, because yeah, really, most people aren't going to need this. I'm not going to need this. Like, I just told you, like, I'm kind of leaning more towards less graphically impressive games already in terms of what I want to play. So for me, it's like, I don't really need all this. Like, it's cool that it does this. I think there's some potential with the like AI silicon stuff and like how it can up res and do more with what processing is happening behind the scenes. But it's just like, yeah, to the layman and to most of us who haven't really been able to experience the PS5 yet, I think they're going to have a hard time getting a lot of unit sales out of this, unless there's an amazing like trade-in program where it's like trade in your PS5 and we'll give you a PS5 Pro for, you know, $100 or $150 or something like that. Like Maybe.
Yeah, no, I mean,
maybe.
And I've done that before in the past. I never had a PS4 Pro, but yeah, this one just like literally I can't even think of a reason why I would waste my time to go to GameStop and do the trade-in and spend the, you know, 50 or 60 bucks. Like, it just doesn't even make sense. Like, so I think, you know, you're exactly right. You're going to get the Sony heads, like the people who are just like super crazy about Sony. And there are those people just like, you know, I am one of those people for Nintendo. I buy almost everything they put out.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I enjoy being that person for Nintendo. But
do you have a Switch OLED?
I do not. I do not. So. But I did, like, for the 3DS, like, I got the base model, and then I got the Pro upgrade for that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just the screen quality for the OLED, even though they look super snazzy, and that wasn't enough to get me.
Yeah. It was just like I think I had an expendable chunk of income, and I had sold some other stuff, and I knew I was going to sell my Switch for a decent chunk of change. So it was just like, yeah, I'll upgrade to the OLED. Like, Tears of the Kingdom is about to come out. I want to be able to play that on a better looking screen. So let's just do it.
This sounds so absurd. And it is the only console I've ever felt this way about, but like, I'm actually like kind of sentimentally attached to my Switch. Like, I don't want to trade it in for some reason.
The OG Switch.
Aww. Yeah. The OG Switch. Yeah.
That's not absurd. That's very heartwarming. That's kind.
Yeah.
That is a good sentiment. Lots of good memories had in the Switch, man.
For sure. For sure.
Oh, still remember getting mine just the day of, like, being so impressed. I was like, this is a legitimate piece of hardware. Like, this is a nice piece of tech, versus when I got the Wii U, I was like, I don't know about this. Dude, I don't know.
I was there GameStop opening night. Merry Switchmas, baby. It was a great night.
It was. I mean, it was March, but yeah. Around that time, Switchmas, I guess. Yes. Is that what they called it? Is that the marketing event?
Dude, I don't, there was some kid that was there, and he just kept saying, Merry Switchmas, and then a line, like, over and over again. He had probably heard it like 100 times that night.
It's like, all right, dude. It's not that funny anymore. Please stop.
Please cool stop. It, bro.
Okay. So yeah, PS5 Pro specs, we'll see. I don't have high confidence for that, so that's sad.
They need a W, man. They need to come out swinging this summer. Like, give something to the shareholders or something, because it's been in a nosedive.
You're the shareholder, Landry. You are the gamer. We are the gamers that need something from Sony.
So true. So true.
I'll send them an email. They definitely respond to all those. All right. We had Mario Day, and we had some fun little updates. Actually, this is a quick, very snappy announcement, and I think they even like stealth dropped some news after they had this video come out. But yeah, we got an announcement that a new Mario movie is coming in 2026. Of course,
cool.
Very, very excited about that. That's great. The Mario movie is huge in our house right now. Henry is obsessed with it. So that's
Sawyer had a phase where he was all over it, man.
We watched that at least like once a week, maybe more. I don't even know. We watched like the last 20 minutes last night just because he wanted to watch a little bit. And I was like, eh, we only got like, it's time for bed. So we'll do like 20 minutes. We'll just watch the end and we'll go to bed.
Nice.
So good. Love
it.
It
is good. I do too.
So excited about that. Paper Mario, Thousand Year Door. We got the release date May 23rd. So cool. Excited for that.
You're
game.
Excited for that one. That's good. And your excitement has me thinking about actually picking it up.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. You're not excited?
Well, I've just never been a Paper Mario guy, man.
Have you played this one?
I had the 64 one, not growing up, but when I rebought the 64 a few years ago, and I liked it all right.
What don't you like about them?
Okay. The combat, like the whole like action combat RPG thing, like I loved it, Super Mario RPG, when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I find that it gets a little tedious
in
like a 20-hour game, you know? That kind of frustrates me. And then, like, with Paper Mario, ever since the first two, there's just always some mechanic that is so effing annoying, dude. Like, it's so annoying. And it's just like, how did you make this way? How did this pass playtesting?
Yeah, so I will say with this one and Paper Mario on 64, they are almost exactly the same in terms of how they function. The GameCube or Thousand Year Door has a bit more like moves that Mario can do, where he can like roll up into a tube and like go under doors and stuff. And there's like some other stuff you can do. But I loved
Origami King, the exploration part of it. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really sick. So And I've just heard so much about Thousand Year Door, the story and everything. So that I will probably pick this up, give it a shot. It looks really cool. It looks really pretty.
It's
I
just,
like what they've done.
It's just, there's something about these. It's very whimsical, very lighthearted. The writing's always been very, like, kind of tongue-in-cheek, funny.
Right.
You know, it's kind of the same writing as, like, the Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga kind of.
I think it's better. I think it's better than those. The writing in Superstar Saga, all those games, and I think I've played all of those. I don't really like the writing very much in those.
Mm-hmm. It's like, these are like the precursors to those. They're not the same teams, but I know like the styles are very influenced by each other. So very excited about that. Can't wait. Luigi's Mansion 2 HD, also known as Dark Moon from the 3DS, is coming out.
Did you play that one?
June 27th. Yes, I did. And I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I remember liking it, but it's been a very long time.
That was the first Luigi's Mansion game I ever played, and I thought it was quite nice.
So you did not play...
I've played all three of them.
Luigi's Mansion first.
Correct. I actually played that one on 3DS.
Wow.
When it came out on 3DS as the re-release.
I forgot about this. You're right.
And then, three, though, I just think three literally is like two times better of a game than two. It's just, I think it's going to be hard for a lot of people to go back to two. However, if they kind of fix the controls for two, because the way it handled a little bit on 3DS, I think it was a little flat.
The way everything handled on 3DS was just flat. Yeah. It was just never that great. You're like, oh, this kind of hurts my hand. Oh,
man, yeah, I've got a little arthritis in my thumb. But yeah, I think if they can make it feel as fun as three, it will actually be worth replaying, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. But that's a game that I'll probably wait on as well to kind of see how it lands with people. Because if it's not that great, I'm like, I'll just stick with three. I'll replay three when I feel like it. But
for sure. And that's all Nintendo's ever going to come out with.
Yeah.
Those two games.
Yep. That's it. Nothing else. Yep. And then we got three new Mario titles out of the Switch Online. We got Dr. Mario from Game Boy. We got Game Boy Colors, Mario Golf, and Mario Tennis. They all arrived on March 12th, which is kind of cool. So
I thought that was funny. Mario Tennis, Mario Golf, very cool. Mario Golf on the Game Boy
Good
Color.
Games.
It's like a RPG.
Yeah, I know.
Pretty cool. But I just was thinking to myself, the only thing I could think of was like, who is going to play Dr. Mario on the Game Boy? Like, it's already on the NES. It's got the N64 version out there. I'm like, who's going to just go to that Game Boy one and actually click into it and play it?
So
that would be wild.
Here's the thing. I don't know if we've talked about this. Maybe we have, maybe we haven't, but like, I like that they're adding Game Boy games and it's cool that they're on there. And like, it just feels, I don't like playing some of these games on the Switch for whatever reason.
Not really.
It's not bad, but I just miss being able to play it on like a small device on like a Game Boy device.
Yeah.
Like if they just had a tethered, you know, modern Game Boy that like, could sync these downloads to like my handheld and I could
like
just play
Game
them
Boy
on
classic like they did with the NES and all that.
It'd be amazing. I'd be so in. Like, yeah, just give me like 30 titles to play that you guys think are like the penultimate collection for the Game Boy and I'm in, you know.
That's interesting. I don't know that I feel the same way. I like playing on the Pocket, for instance, but I also really like the kind of, I think that the emulation for Game Boy Advance and Game Boy is done really well to where the image doesn't look stretched when they blow it up on the screen for the Switch. So I've been very impressed with that. And I actually really like playing with it like full screen on, especially Game Boy Advance games. Some of that pixel art, like when we played Golden Sun, you threw that bad boy up on the TV. It was pretty stunning. I was really impressed with the way some of those games look on a full TV. I think that's, there's some positives.
And like I think the UX, the rewind functions that they have, like pre-built in and save states, like that all works pretty well, pretty seamless.
Yeah, it's so easy.
I do like that. I do like that.
It's
like,
pretty sweet.
I don't know. Just I guess I'm just used to playing all these games on like the original hardware and I'm like, oh man, if they only be
there is something about original hardware, man. That is for sure.
I think it's just
an OG hardware guy.
I think it's honestly the lack of a D-pad.
Yeah,
on the Switch.
The Switch Pro Controller's D-pad is
boo-boo.
Absolute trash. I don't know how they could mess that up so bad.
So smushy.
Had so many good.
You invented the D-pad. Like, you basically put this thing on the map. Like, Come on.
The best test for a D-pad is like just fire up a Contra game for a few seconds. And if like you can't shoot diagonally, which you cannot on the Switch, it just like goes everywhere. Yeah, man, that's absolute perfection.
Just holding up an SNES controller for the audio listeners and like this D-pad still feels amazing. It just still feels right.
It's incredible. So you got the wireless one for the Switch Online?
No, this is I actually got it from McKay's for Henry when he was a lot younger. And oh, dude, I just sweet. took the wire out and let Brilliant. Him play with it. So
that's awesome.
Sorry to any purists out there. You're like, you've ruined the controller. But
dude, those things are cheap. You can get them. You can find them all over the place.
It's like $5 or less. All right. And then we also got Lego Mario Kart. There's a Mario Kart set for Lego coming out in 2025, which I thought was kind of cool. So
yeah, interesting that we're getting announcements for that a year in advance. But
Lego cool. wanted to cash in on that. They're like, well, all right, we'll just let people know it's coming. Just not yet. They're like really ramping up their like partnerships and their crossovers, which I appreciate.
But they're selective. Like they're not doing like trash, unless you walk through the grocery store. Because in Mario, if you've ever noticed, like for kids section, Mario's everywhere, dude. It's like
he's everywhere.
Sons, Mario.
People love Mario. Yeah, we have Mario cereal.
Pop-Tarts, Mario. Mm-hmm. Oreos, Mario.
You're right. Oreo. We had Mario Oreos too. All right. Now on to a more sad story. Akira Toriyama, the infamous creator of Dragon Ball, passed away on March 1st. And I got a tickle in my throat. I apologize. Just like you. Only mine's happening right now in the middle of the podcast.
Contagious. Yeah, man. Akira Toriyama is such an iconic art style. Like, I'm not the guy who is like the art style dude. Like, there's two that I think are just like profoundly recognizable, and it's Akira Toriyama and Miyazaki. I just feel like those two art styles, I can see them in a lineup of anything and pick them out immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I was a Dragon Ball Z kid.
Me too.
When I was at early age, like, you know, like I remember being like 7 and 8 and waking up at 7:30 on Saturday morning to get that. I lived in Texas back then, so we were like central time, but to watch an hour of Dragon Ball Z, man. And I've never rewatched Dragon Ball Z, and I didn't even watch it in like my teenage years. So I don't remember much, but I remember that being like pivotal. And, you know, that may have been the reason when I saw Chrono Trigger, and I was like 12 years old that I wanted to rent it. And that was like the first RPG I ever played. So, you know, that could have been, and I'm not sure, you know, this is all like, but the connections there, you know, those characters look similar. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so he did have a role to play, even for me. I'm not like an anime guy, but I love Dragon Quest. I love Chrono Trigger, and Dragon Ball Z is pretty cool.
Yeah. For me, growing up with two brothers, one older, one younger, like a lot of our time was spent watching Dragon Ball Z. And sweet. we would literally just, I mean, the Cell saga, we watched all the way through, Frieza obviously before that, and then Buu saga. And then that's like when we started like kind of falling off a little bit, but man, we would like imitate the fights. We would like try to go Super Saiyan. I drew a lot. In like elementary school, and I still draw now, but like a lot of like my early drawings were just of like Goku and like any like DBZ character that I could like remember how they looked.
Very cool.
And I just, you know, his art style is incredible, and it's been really fun seeing all the people that he's impacted, both like current artists and just different communities and people in all kinds of countries across the world are like paying him tribute. So it's pretty amazing.
For sure, man. And like even going out around town in like Chattanooga, like I went to a bar a couple weeks ago, and like on the wall someone had drawn what is the green guy's name? Piccolo. Or something like that. Mm-hmm. So had drawn him, and it was like RIP Akira Toriyama. It's like super cool, you know, just like. And then I on ESPN, you know, I watch sports a lot, and they had a like a shout out to him.
Stephen A. Smith do it?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So
yeah.
Which I'm not a big fan of him, but I saw it on Twitter. But pretty cool, man.
I feel like he botched like the pronunciation of like Dragon Ball or something like that.
It's the heart that counts, right?
He tried at least. He at least mentioned it, which was good. So Yeah, so sad news, but his impact will be felt for centuries or decades or however long, you know, people forget about anime, but I don't think they will, so R.I.P.
Akira Toriyama. Yeah, I think it's a pretty pivotal work.
I think his legacy is sealed, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. All right, and then Game Informer, I just added this last minute, but Game Informer is back in magazine form. Pretty cool.
Yeah, man, we were talking about that. That's awesome.
I know that they, like, they're part of GameStop. They kind of are shuttering almost every part of their business because they're not doing well. And obviously the magazine is one expense that they had. So I think it had kind of like stopped, or like, I should know more about this story. I forgive you for not doing more research, but I just know that they are completely independent and they have relaunched it now. And so you can buy 10 issues for like $20, or you can get 20 issues for like $34.
Dude, I'm gonna get a subscribe tonight. That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's really cool, and it's a small team that has to produce that every single month, and it's usually like really good coverage of like big games, and they get to do some cool stuff. So I think it's a fun thing to see, also at such an affordable price. So here's to the Game Informer folks, to keeping that dream alive of print media, print games journalism.
Yeah, man. I love getting a magazine in the mail. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
I used to just like eagerly await my issue of Nintendo Power or Electronic Gaming Monthly or whatever I was subscribed to.
I had so many of those magazines. I regret getting rid of them because I'm sure some were probably
all worth so much money now. Not so much, but they're worth like $20 an issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was getting them for like nothing for just being a GameStop subscriber. So whatever, it's fine. All right. Moving on to this month's big game releases and their reception. So we have a small list here. I'll read through them, and then we'll kind of circle back on some we want to talk about. So Unicorn Overlord, 88. Expeditions, a Mudrunners game, got a 79. And these are all from Open Credit, Landry?
Yeah, these are Open Credit.
Contra, Operation Galuga, 73. Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection, 67. Hi-Fi Rush, at an 89 right now for PS5.
Sweet.
MLB The Show, 24, 78. Dragon's Dama, 88. Princess Peach Showtime, 75. And Rise of the Ronin, 76.
Yeah. Some surprisingly high scores here. I did not expect Unicorn Overlord to perform as well as it did.
People love that. Matthew knew. Matthew Pilkington knew of the Watcher Gaming over there.
Yeah, he's a big fan. That's awesome. Dude, that guy plays a lot of video games.
He knows. He knows things.
Yeah. Contra Operation Galuga, oddly enough, is probably my... I'm most excited about that game. I want to go pick that up. It's one of those games where I'm almost certain in like a year, it'll probably be like $7.99 on the eShop, and that's when I'll snag it. but the score doesn't surprise me. Like, I never thought that a Contra game was going to score super well. Those games are hardcore, and a lot of the criticism I've seen of it is not necessarily about like the gameplay or that anything's dropping frames or anything. It's all about like the graphic style, or like, oh, this is tough as nails. So it seems like it's hitting on all the right notes for me. And then Hi-Fi Rush, man, you've been playing that, yes?
I have not, but Matt has, and he is okay. Loving it.
Yeah, dude, I'm definitely going to pick that up at some point. That might be the next game I buy, and I'm excited to play that. I'm honestly scared that I will not like it at all because it is a rhythm action game, and I like rhythm games. You know, like Elite Beat Agents is like low-key one of my favorite games. Guitar Hero is easily one of my favorite games of all time. I just don't know if the whole action thing, like, I've heard some people compare it to Punch Out, and that scares me because I just like really do not like Punch Out at all.
Don't say that.
Well, yeah. I'm sorry.
It's more rhythm action. Like, it's more like Matt was saying, have you played like any of the Crypt of the Necro Dancer games?
Yes. I played the Zelda one.
Yeah.
Zelda
so one. It's kind of like that in some way where you're like timing your attacks on the beat and stuff.
And I can dig that. I can dig that. The other thing about those games is like, you've got to be like fully engaged, right? Which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
But it demands your whole attention. Yep. So, you know, the kids have to be in bed, you know.
And you're just bopping. You're just bopping exactly. Back there.
Pretty sweet.
Well, Dad's really, really jamming out in there. I can hear him playing. yeah. The one that kind of made me laugh a little bit and kind of sad is the Star Wars Battlefront collection. I don't know if you've seen any of like the launch woes around this, but they like had terrible server issues. Like they basically, I think they had like two servers that were actually like functioning when they launched this game. And so no one could get in for the longest time. And I don't, I'm assuming it's recovered now at this point, but I think the reason it has such a low score is because the state that it launched in for online play.
And that sucks. I feel like reviewers should just like delay a score if that happens. Although, I mean, these games, I'm interested to see how they would hold up in the modern day. I played Battlefront 2, I think, on PS2 with some friends a couple times, and they're just not my style of the game. I think that, like, I understand that there's a lot of nostalgia tied to these games, and that they're a really cool, like, arcadey kind of shooter. This one's just not ever going to be for me. But Aspyr Strikes Again, man, they are notorious for swiping up these classic franchises that have a lot of like kind of cult following, and just putting out like a doo-doo release. And you know, it's not surprising. Yeah, not surprising that it's a 67.
Oh, a doo-doo release. Oh man. Yeah, I don't know. I never played those games, but I remember seeing the anger from some people, be like, "No, this sucks."
I never really played them. I mean, I played them at friends' houses a couple times.
And then Dragon's Dogma 2 is hot right now. People
I feel like that stole the conversation for the month. Really,
yeah, I mean, definitely the game of the month for sure.
About as big. It's not as big as Final Fantasy VII, but.
It's big. It's big. People are very impressed by it. And we'll talk about the non-traversy in just a second about this. But
incredible.
Looks great. And then, yeah, I think last, just like we had Princess Peach Showtime come out. And people say that it's fine. It's very similar to Kirby or a Yoshi game where it's like very simple, straightforward. There's like a few collectibles. But unfortunately, replaying those levels is not enjoyable because like you have to start from the very beginning. There's no like there's 10 no
15 minute levels.
Yeah.
Lots of dialogue that you can't skip through.
Yeah. And so that's unfortunate. That'll not be a game that I'm going to pick up. And I'm thankful that I dropped it from my fantasy critic list because I was just like, this does not look like it's going to score super high.
Interesting choice on the dialogue as well. You can't like not only can you not skip it, but like you can't press like an action button to move it forward. Like it moves at its own pace. Ooh. So there's an interesting thing there. It is for kids, right? But it also, you know, every kid reads at a different rate and pace. So they've kind of hit that middle ground. It moves a little too slow for like adults, but maybe even a little too fast for some younger kids. So that was a really, really weird choice. And I wonder if they'll patch that in the future.
I hope so. I hope it gets like a few quality of life patches so everyone can kind of enjoy it more, but I know people are almost saying it's fun.
I almost dread the day like if Sawyer ever asked if he can pick up this game because I'm like, man, I just don't want to play it. Zero desire to
I'll let to you play it. Like you can play through it if you want. I'm not gonna participate potentially. Just I don't know if I can sit through this.
Yeah.
It's too slow. It's too painful.
It's just all about the slowness. Like talking in a platformer is rough.
That is tough. Like let's just move through. Let's just go. Come on. I mean, overall, like a more of a quiet month, I would say, comparatively to the past two. You know, there haven't been some big hitters.
Still some big stuff though.
Dragon's Dogma.
Unicorn Overlord, Dragon's Dogma,
Rise of the Ronin. I know people were saying that's pretty solid as well, but it's sitting a little bit lower. Than I think some expected to as well. So
for sure,
yeah. Looking forward to next month. And then last, interesting, funny bits or worst Twitter takes. I just thought this was kind of funny or interesting. The Xbox Baldur's Gate 3 retail version is 4 discs. We're like going back to the PS1 days where like you're trying to get Final Fantasy 7 and if there's 4 discs. You have to like insert the next one to like be able to play it and stuff.
Yeah, that's incredible.
That's kind of cool. I don't think this is totally how this edition is going to like function. I'm sure half of it's like... Yeah, hold on. It'll have 4 discs.
You probably install it all to your hard drive and then won't have to mess with it again, right?
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully. I mean, that's the hope. You can just put in like 1 disc once you've got it all downloaded onto your onto your hard drive or something like that. But just funny that like
that is hilarious.
The sizes of our games have increased so exponentially that they just, you know, we thought we were going to get away from that with like Blu-ray discs and everything else.
Dude, the worst thing was getting like the hot new RPG for PlayStation 1, and you get to like, you get past disc 2, and then disc 3 is like scratched to hell. Like your dog got a hold of it or something. Like that happened to me more than once growing up.
Oh, I can't finish the game.
It's like, I'm pretty sure I never beat Final Fantasy 3 because, Final Fantasy 7, because my last disc was just completely wrecked.
That's sad. That is very sad. And then in more news about Baldur's Gate 3 being massive, this is kind of a fun little story from IGN. Baldur's Gate 3's collective dialogue has tripled the word count of the Lord of the Rings series.
Wow. So we're looking at like 3,000 pages. I wonder if that includes The Hobbit and The Silmarillion, but that's insane, dude.
That is a lot of words. That's a lot of words in a video game.
That is. This are arguably too many.
Maybe too many words. We don't need all those words. That's okay. But it's cool. All right. what is this one? This one comes from Bruh901 on Reddit.
Yes. And he says that critics must rescore Dragon's Dogma 2 in light of microtransactions. And
is this from you? Are you Bruh901?
No, not at all. I couldn't care less about the microtransactions in Capcom games because they've had DLC microtransactions that are just like absolutely absurd for the past like few years, and Monster Hunter and Resident Evil. And anytime you go to the PS5 shop and there's a sale, you'll just see like 95 entries of Resident Evil games because you can buy like different tops for all your characters and like different pants as well. And it's like, dude, all these are 99 cents, but like that's kind of like what it looks like. I've never played Dragon's Dogma 2, but I was looking through the DLC list and it's like, yes, there's the whole fast travel port crystal, there's camping packs and stuff like that, but like from everything I've gathered, it seems like the game gives you plenty to operate off of. And I have played Dragon's Dogma 1, and there isn't fast travel necessarily in that game, from what I remember. Could be wrong, it's been a long time. But it just seems like, you know, these are not really that big of a deal. And somehow, like, these are the issues that just catch fire on the internet. And it's like everybody wants to talk about it for a day or so. And it drives me insane.
Well, and like, I still see people asking about it. They're like, oh, man, should I pick up Dragon's Dogma 2? I'm seeing some like bad stuff about this DLC. And it's like, dude, just like, I don't know who like misinformed the people, but like everyone like clearly loves this game. Like there's just a small subset of individuals that are getting pissed because there's microtransactions. But if you actually like listen to anyone that's played the whole game or played through, like you don't need any of the microtransactions to play the game. Like you don't need it. Like they're just there if you want to, and then they're not in the actual game. You have to go to like the store outside of the game to actually find them. So it's just like
they probably know that 99% of players aren't going to buy that DLC.
It's just there. It's just extra money for them if they, you know, exactly. They get some people jump into it, which they probably will. I mean, I know a lot of people are like, yeah, I don't have the time for this. I'm going to buy some stuff to speed my progression up, and I'm just going to move through it. You know, time is money.
And, you know, it'd be cool to see if, like, somebody could do a speed run with, like, buying a bunch of port crystals or something. You know, like, all of it seems additive and not at all taking away from the game, and that's exactly what DLC should be.
Agreed, Landry. So who should we award our horse armor trophy of the month to for March? You know, typically the horse armor trophy goes to the publisher, usually one of the big three that had some of the worst PR or press for the month.
I'm going to vote for PlayStation again, just because they didn't really have too much bad news, but when is their win going to come, right? Like the PS5 Pro is kind of a disaster, right? Like I don't remember reading anything over the past couple of weeks that was positive about it.
Yeah.
It's all speculative and questioning, like, do we need this? Like I can't remember how many articles I scrolled through when I Googled PS5 Pro specs about like, do we need a PS5? It seemed to like be the general consensus of just like the article take, like asking really, the question and talking through it. And it's like, yeah, I imagine a lot of them come to the same conclusion that Eurogamer did. And that is like, yeah, no, we don't need this. Need is a strong word, first of all.
Yes, we don't want this. Yeah.
Yeah. Do we want it? Like, certainly not.
Not really, no. Yeah, so, yeah.
But if you have another take, I'm not...
No, Sony would be my vote as well. They are the official winners of the horse armor trophies.
La, 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 la.
I'll like Photoshop a horse armor trophy into my hand right there when I do that. Boom.
Sweet.
All right. Now I'm excited for this next part, Game & Watch for April. Just some games to keep your eyes on. There's not a lot coming out, but we got Grounded coming to PS5 April 16th.
Honey, cool. I Shrunk the Kids.
This is one of the first in the like the four announced Xbox games, right? That were like blown up last month about like, oh, they're going third party. Yeah. This is one of those. We're getting Grounded.
Well, the first was a Hi-Fi Rush, right?
Hi-Fi Rush, yeah, sorry. So yeah, Hi-Fi Rush and then Grounded. And then we get Tales of Kinsara Zao coming out on April 23rd. Again, that's the Metroidvania. Cool. Looks cool.
Oh, I didn't know that was not Xbox exclusive. Neat.
It is not. TMNT, Arcade, Wrath of the Mutants, PS5, okay. Xbox Series X, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, PC. Sorry, I wasn't naming off the consoles they're coming to. Grounded is coming to PS5, PS4, Switch, and Kinsara is coming
Switch,
to
wow.
all consoles, basically. Yeah, Switch, I don't know how that one's going to perform. We'll see. Switch, wow. Stellar Blade, PS5 exclusive coming April 26th. Sandland this is actually kind of cool. It's Akira Toriyama's artwork again in this one, and this is actually based on an anime as well.
Yeah, I'd like to pick the demo up for that.
Yeah, I want to check it out. Just kind of see what's going on. It's about building mechs in the desert and just fighting things. I don't know. That comes out April 26th, and then Sea of Thieves for PS5, which is the third in the list, I believe, comes out April 30th.
Man, they got all the games out fast, huh?
They did. They already had them ready to rock and roll, which I think is why we started getting all those heavy rumors about them. So,
yeah. Heavy rumors.
Heavy rumors. Most excited for me, I think Sea of Thieves and Sandland. I'm kind of interested.
Yeah. Sea of Thieves seems cool. I'll probably not play it, but I love like the idea of playing a Rareware game in 24, like gets me excited. Mm-hmm. But probably going to say Sandland's like the closest thing to something I may play on this list. If it's cool, I like the art style. So maybe that, yeah. But I really just don't like desert landscapes, just to be honest. Not my thing.
Not for me. Well, if you guys do want to stay up to date on game releases for the month, you can subscribe to our shared Google calendar that is linked in the show notes. So check that out. All right, jumping over to our Game of the Month Club. I'm excited about this one for real, though.
Dude, me too.
So we played Castlevania Symphony of the Night on PS5, which was originally released on PlayStation 1. And, you know, Landry, I think you really were the one that picked this game, and I'm happy you did. And I'll let you start. We'll do our highs, our lows, and then our overall score out of 5.
Okay, so... highs for me, just the overall aesthetic of the game. I feel like it's one of the best aged PS1 games, and I like the horror theme personally. Like, I'm not a big horror guy, but I am a big monster movie guy, from the classic Universal films. So just the fact that you can take on some epic boss battles against old school monsters like Frankenstein and the Mummy and Medusa is really cool and fun for me. They're all named different things. Mm-hmm. But more to the game's design, I feel like most Metroidvanias that you play these days, at least a lot of them, well, just take Metroid as a series, for example. The focus of that game is more gaining abilities to unlock new areas. Like, each ability is a key, and maybe it's additive to your kind of weapon kit as well. But right. Combat takes a back seat, except for boss battles in Metroid. Mm-hmm. In Castlevania, I feel like the front seat is the combat. Like, that's what this game is all about, is just running through a gauntlet of enemies and getting to that next save point. And the challenge really ramps up towards the latter half of the game. But I really like that kind of change of pace from a lot of the Metroidvanias that I played, the combat focus, you still have the abilities that like are kind of acting as keys, but there's only like five that are really quintessential to the game. And the other thing about just the design of this game, it being one castle, you're kind of just like, this is the way I played it anyway. And I didn't use a guide really until the second half of the game. And I was just running a laps around the castle, right? And like, yes. I would run a lap and, you know, which you have no idea where the save states are. So you hit a certain amount of save states and you just take a look at the map and you're like, okay, I know that in the top left corner, I need to, there's a bunch of space over there. There's got to be something over there. So then you just start poking around and you look at your map, look where there's an opening and kind of find something. And then you find a new skill or something like that. And then go to the next area. I thought that was an interesting design. And there's not a lot of Metroidvanias that I've played where there's like this one kind of connected circle and then different rooms and areas branch off from that. So I found that to be very interesting. And then, dude, some of these boss battles are freaking sick. Did you find Grand Falloon?
So full disclosure, I am like at a, I'm at 100% of completion and I'm about to go into the inverted castle.
Okay, cool.
So I haven't gotten to like the other half. I don't know. If
Grand Falloon's in the first castle.
If he's in there, then I may have already fought him or not. What does he look like? What does Grand Falloon look like?
The giant sphere of just dead bodies glued to each other, and every time you hit it, a body falls off and starts like running after you.
I don't think I've fought this yet.
It's the most terrifying and also awesome boss I've played in a very long time.
I think I'm in the area where that's, I just got to the area where that's about to start showing up in the catacombs or whatever.
Yes, I think that is where it's at.
Yeah, okay.
It's so sick, dude.
It's cool. In the catacombs. Oh gosh, okay.
Ooh. It is a really cool, creepy, nasty, disgusting boss.
Creepy, nasty.
I also like the idea of leveling up in a Metroidvania. It makes like every Metroidvania I've ever played, you're going to get lost. You're going to have to poke around. It makes those times where you're poking around, you're not just wasting your time. You can actually level up as well, which is cool.
Yeah. I mean, everything you said, I agree with. The highs for me, like, this game like has like continual like things that reveal themselves to you, like better than I would say other Metroidvanias, in that like you're Metroid is a good example where you see a glowing door and then you're just like, okay, well I got to come back to this and I got to find the thing that does that. Whereas like in Symphony of the Night, sometimes you might already even have the ability to like get through certain areas. You just don't realize you have the ability to do it. Like I was telling you, there's a true sense of discovery in this game where both from the environment and the gameplay standpoint, where you can be like, I was like button mashing and kind of smashing some buttons to like do something. And I made a spell happen. And I was just, I was like, wait, who knew there were spells in this game? Who knew there were familiars in this game that follow you around and like level up and then you can turn them into like a weapon themselves. I was just like, what? Like, this is insane. Like, there's just like so many things I do not know about this game. And it almost feels like Symphony of the Night was designed to be played with a manual. Like, did the game come with a manual that showed you the spells?
Looked it up, man. I looked it up today and I was surprised at how little there was. It mentions the five relics you need. Uh-huh. That you're looking for in the castle.
Yes.
It does mention there are spells. It mentions there are secret combos, but like it doesn't tell you about any of them. So
that's crazy. That's crazy. But I just love, I love the boldness of that, of just being like, we're just not going to tell the players that they can do combos and see if they figure it out. You know, like, that's cool. And then, yes,
there's no mention of the inverted castle either.
There's no mention. Like, you wouldn't even know. Like, you can finish. I fought Richter first, you know, and I was like, okay, clearly there's more I'm supposed to be doing here because I haven't explored this whole bottom half of this castle yet. And they just started me back here. So I went down to the bottom and I found out where to get in there and started going through the catacombs and stuff. And I learned about the inverted castle because I got stuck once. Sadly, it got spoiled for me. And I was just like, oh, there's like a whole... there's like a 200% for this game that I have to achieve. Sort of like, I guess Donkey Kong does that too, where there's like,
you can get Tropical Freeze does.
Yeah. It's just like, you can get double the amount that you think you're supposed to get. So yeah,
I my percentage.
I think it's great. I think the end game content's good. Movement, combat, all feels great. The only downs for me were like map clarity. The map works fine as it is, and I think maybe it works in its favor in some ways to not give you too much information, but like it's annoying to like see one space in your map where there's like an open doorway and you're like, is that where I'm supposed to go? And you're like, okay, I'll wander back over that way and see. And then you spend all this time going over there. And then you get there and you're like, oh, I remember. I can't go here because I don't have the freaking thing yet. So I got to find it. It's the worst. Like,
that's the great frustration of Metroidvanias, right?
Not a good experience. But if the map could clearly indicate, oh, here's this color. This means that you need the bat relic or whatever, or mist relic. It's right. Like, ah, okay, I'm not going to go over there. I'm not going to waste my time because I don't have that yet. Like that, that's kind of like, you know, the downside. And then I had an issue with diagonal downward strikes on the PS5. Maybe it's just an issue with the controller, but like having to like swing down, like it wasn't consistent enough for me, like where I'm just like, there's like some short enemies or you're like above one and you're trying to like swing down and kill them. And I'm like,
that's like, stinking flea, man.
Come on, just hit it. Just hit it one time. Come on.
Were you using the analog stick or the D-pad?
I've used both, but I think I find it, the D-pad feels better to me.
For the downward strike, yeah. I mean, I use the D-pad the whole time, but
yeah.
Yeah, and then also on the highs about like secret combos and stuff, there's this one weapon where if I press down forward, I can throw the sword out and it like spins around and it hits the enemy twice and then comes back to me.
Nice.
And it does like double damage. And
what sword is it?
It's curved. I think I always see this word in like fantasy and
scimitar,
I'm so insecure.
The scimitar, whatever
yes,
it is.
Scimitar, yeah. But that's not what it is though. It's like it's a different type of scimitar. Like
okay.
There's two of them that you find like almost I found them like in the same probably 10 minutes of each other.
Dang.
I don't know. Okay. I'll text it to you when I see it. But anyway, it was really cool to just stumble on that. I was trying to do that downward strike. And then I threw it and I was like, holy smokes, that was awesome.
What the? I don't know if I could do that. This is amazing. Yeah. And there's all kinds of moments like that.
For sure. Yeah. It is a really cool way for the game to keep all those things, hold those things back, and then you discover them. Or, you know, you can go to the master librarian and buy spells and learn the combos that way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can learn all that stuff or do all that stuff before you get it. Which is neat. There's also, for a low or a negative, in my opinion, that the inverted castle is so sick and awesome, but it's locked away behind a really obtuse puzzle. Like, you literally have to find two items, and you have to equip them in one room. And I don't know maybe I skipped over it in dialogue or something. Yeah, but I didn't have any hints in my gameplay that would have led me to do that. And I may have just skipped over something, but I thought that was very obtuse.
There's all kinds of crap like that, dude. Like, one of the ways to, like, open a little room in the bottom left, like, in that very first area with all the mermen, you have to fly through one way as the bat and come back through as the wolf to unlock a door in the bottom left. And I was like, how in the world? Like, how?
What? I didn't get to that one.
I was like, how is this even a thing? Like, how is this something that somebody should have known?
Yeah, that's you know, you're at recess with your friends. Type thing
they tell you, yeah,
you know, the collective.
Oh, did you know
headspace is all over that?
You gotta fly through the cave as a bat and come back as a wolf, and then it opens a secret tunnel, dude.
You told me your dad worked at Nintendo, you lying piece of crap,
piece of shit. Yeah, it's just kind of stinks that they would hide some of that stuff behind there. But no, I mean, it's so good. The soundtracks are the music's so good. The art style holds up super well. The funny thing is that, you know, being one of the first 3D consoles, it's funny that you know, there's not a lot of 3D in it, but you'll notice it in some places, like the save points,
yeah,
where it spins the coffin around you. You're like, oh wow,
there's like when the castle flips and like when you get the fake ending cutscene and the last ending cutscene.
Mm-hmm.
There's some some actual like cutscenes.
Yeah, some of the cutscenes are pretty funny too. They're just very murky. Shadowed, yes. Castle on a hill. You're like, okay, yeah, there it is. There's Dracula's castle. Let's get in there.
It's endearing. It's endearing.
It's endearing. It is. Yeah. It's got that spooky cult vibe kind of to it. You know, just it's a little bit out of something. Something's wrong with it, but it's good.
What are you gonna give the game, Jake? Overall score?
I mean, it's kind of lame to give it this, but I think it's a 5 out of 5. I mean, like, it, I think to me, it's a perfect game for what it is. I mean, I think this is the game that put Castlevania really on the map in terms of like what a game should be like this. And I think it even does things that are more still interesting or intuitive or fun than some more modern Metroidvanias that have come out since this, which has been a long time.
I agree. I mean, like, easily in my top 5 Metroidvanias, I would give it a 5 out of 5 as well. I think it being so action focused, and it actually gives me, like, I'm not going to call this a Dark Souls like, but it gives me that same, when you're in the inverted castle, the enemies are so tough, and like getting to that next save point is so difficult. It gives you that same kind of grind as Dark Souls. And for that to just hit halfway through the game and shift, like, for me, a game from exploring to just trying to make it to the next save point was mm-hmm. really cool. The bosses, again, are just so awesome. And also, a really cool thing that I never noticed when I played this on PS3, I never beat it back then. I've played all the NES and Super Nintendo Castlevanias since, and mm-hmm. this is like the perfect sequel to the Castlevania games that had come before, and it wraps up like all the lore in the previous Castlevanias. And I mean, that's just a cool little added bonus, but it really is not only the culmination of what Castlevania was before it, because Castlevania 1, 3, and 4, those games are really, really sick. But then 2 kind of had this Metroidvania thing, but they just didn't do it extremely well.
Right.
But yeah, it kind of adds all those together and just comes out with this incredible game. So I would say it's 5 out of 5 as well. And it just plays really great in mm-hmm. 2024 still. So yeah. I had a really good time with it. Like, I was literally like, oh, I can't wait to go play Castlevania.
Same.
There for about 2 weeks.
And it's because you end like a play session, like, sort of most of the time, like, seeing where you're going to go next. You're like, oh, okay, like, I have this whole area to explore next. Like, can't wait. Like, I'm excited to go check that out and make progress. So,
right.
Yeah. No, that's great. Perfect game. And then we haven't talked about this. April's game of the month. We haven't
I saw it on there like 5 minutes ago, and it's like, oh no,
but
what are we going to do?
I have a suggestion, and we can decide here live on the podcast, but
let's do it.
Pepper Grinder comes out today.
Okay.
It's $15.
Okay.
And it looks like a game that I think could be worth checking out. Could be worth checking out. I'm excited to play it. I plan on picking it up. Or I got another one for you.
Okay.
We could talk about Balatro for April.
Dude, let's do Balatro.
Okay. All right. Because I have Balatro also.
I'm just going to be honest. I played the Pepper Grinder demo, and I did not like it very much.
Okay, perfect.
That's just me. I'm so sorry.
How dare you? How dare you? No, yeah.
It looks cool.
We'll talk about Balatro. I need to like try and get through that game. I need you to help me understand poker hands a little bit more. I understand them from a core concept, but I still get a little confused as to what outranks what. And then also Balatro just is really confusing in general, because it's like, well, this is going to 2X your score here, and you're going to get more points for this suit. So we'll talk about that in April's podcast, I guess.
Yes.
All right. Let's jump over to our last segment then. Name that game music. The hit game where I play music and Leonard plays music, I guess, or we'll play it together, from a video game, and contestants earn points by guessing the correct game and moment or area that it's from.
Dude, what if we don't get any of them?
This will be really embarrassing, but I think you will. I think you'll get these. So Landry's up first.
I think you will too.
He has picked a song for me to play. So I guess this is confusing, but I need to reverse this order because I put them in this way. So it's actually going to be me guessing first, then Landry, then Jake, then Landry. Okay. Sorry.
Sweet.
All right. So you head, put this...
Head v head, mono e mono.
Mono e mono.
Let's go, dude.
Is that a dodgeball quote? Mono e mono.
I feel like that's a quote as old as time, but maybe not.
All right. Here we go. I'm excited. I'm nervous. I'm excited. I'm going to play it. And 3, 2, 1. Okay. Hollow Knight, obviously.
You were right.
And is this the City of Tears?
Oh, nailed it, man.
Yes.
This is my favorite song on the Hollow Knight soundtrack. I knew you were a big fan. See, I gave you a layup right off the bat.
So good. Yes, dude. 10 points. Let's go. 10 points for Jake. All right. Well, I think I may have given you a layup as well. So
okay, let's see. Well, dude, last time you said that you like buried a Mario Kart song that's been literally on like 9 different games.
Okay, hold on. It was on one game. It was the GameCube version. Okay. All right. This is a layup for you.
Banjo-Kazooie.
Correct.
This is like the Gruntilda theme, right? Like right at the beginning, right when the intro's coming on?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
You got it.
Dude, love it.
Actually, I had those mixed up. So the other one's even more of a layup.
Oh, no.
Okay. Yes, that was technically Gruntilda's lair, but yeah, it's the overworld theme where you're just hopping around and just hopping into the paintings or portals and stuff. So,
yeah.
Dude, classic.
What a game, dude. I need to go. I played that like a year ago. 5 out of 5. Love
Grant Kirkhope, man, his scores are just so recognizable.
He's incredible.
He's amazing. All right, here we go. It'll be funny if we pick the same songs for each other.
I know.
Oh, no.
All right. Oh, Donkey Kong Country Aquatic Ambience or whatever it is.
Nailed it. Crushed it. Dude, you don't even need.
Come on. You
need 5 seconds.
Dude, okay.
I told you I was taking it easy on you.
Give some layups. All right. This last one's going to make you laugh then. Here you go.
Oh, Donkey Kong Country, Overworld, baby.
There you go. That was a true layup. The audience isn't even able to hear that one because we played it for like such a short time. Beep, beep. Look at this. Perfect round. 10, 10, 10, 10.
We just took it way too easy on each other.
Yeah. We should probably like try to do like easy mode, hard mode, like one time. It's like, okay, I'm going to give you something that's easy that you probably should know. And then I'm going to give you one that like you might know. Like,
see, it's a work in progress. I love that. That'd be good.
But the thing is, like, again, we know these songs, but to the average person, if we played that music, they'd be like, you guys are gigantic nerds. Like, how in the world do you know within 3 seconds what that game is and where it's like where you are in the game? It's like, yeah, it's true. We are huge nerds.
Good job, man.
We should like do like a tiebreaker one where we just have someone, I'll have Hannah pick a mystery song and send it to us and we'll play like, it.
If I had my wife do that, she'd probably put like Spice Girls or something.
It'd be something crazy. This isn't a game. Yes, it was. It was on DS. You just didn't play it. Oh, man. All right. Well, unfortunately, all that is the end of our March podcast. Listeners, what do you think of just the news for the month? Let us know what stood out to you. If you are going to play Balatro, please tune in and play along with us. We'll be posting some stuff throughout the month. And since I'm back on social media now, or at least more active,
welcome back, bro.
I'll be posting some more clips from this episode and future episodes and previous ones where we can play Name That Game Music with the public there, and they'll have a fun time with us. So please do tune in for that. You can follow us. I'll be posting through the YouTube channel at Bitcast or just Bitblogist, and then on Twitter as well, Bitblogist. Landry, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
I am at Soft Iconoclast on X, and my voice is like gone. So
it's toast. You're done.
So dude, glad we're done because I just need to go to bed.
I just need to take a nap right now. Yeah. And listeners, write into bitcast at bitblogist.com to have your questions and or reviews, concerns, anything else, ideas read off on the show. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, this has been Bitcast. Thanks for tuning in to talk about some stuff.